real great adventures of me, Tom Terrific, with Mighty Manfred the Wonder Dog. Terrific!
I'm Tom Terrific, greatest hero ever. Terrific is the name for me, 'cause I'm so clever. I can be what I wanna be, and if you'd like to see, follow, come follow me. If you see a plane on high, a diesel train go roaring by, a bumblebee or a tree, it's me. When there is trouble, I'm there on the double, from Atlantic to Pacific. They know I'm terrific.
I'm Mighty Manfred, the Wonder Dog, and Tom's ever faithful companion.
Yep, and he is my Wonder Dog, my companion. Yeah, that's true. I got two of them. One's a little smart-ass dachshund who barks at everybody. He'll take your finger off. The other's a calm Siberian husky that'll love you to death. I want to thank all you people for getting their donations in to the P.O. Box. That's P.O. Box 1687, San Jacinto, California, 92583. Incidentally, we've got the number, the national number going again. I thought it was cut off, but it wasn't, so I'll be putting some new messages on there too. Most of our contact is on the internet, very little on regular telephone anymore. Little note here from New York City, Lone Wolf New York City, says there's a story in the New York Post. A black criminal shoots a black female cop sitting in her patrol car because he hates cops. It looks like the black KKK is opening up a chapter in the Bronx, New York. Yeah, looks like it. They're opening up all over the place. The black KKK. That's the latest news from the Bronx. Keep up the good work. Okay, thank you. And thank everybody for getting in their donations. Or did I say that already? Oh, I wanted to add something on to a couple of the stories I told you last week. The one where John and I went to Canada and I gave a speech and then they arrested both of us and held us for 5 days and then shipped us back. Well, they drove us all the way from Ontario, Toronto, to Buffalo. And they had the car we were in, and they had two SUVs behind, black SUVs loaded with RCMP police. Can you believe that? It was unbelievable. Well, they pissed me off. I just happened to have an electronic recorder in my pocket, which they didn't know about. So we got to talking about drugs and stuff with these two cops driving us back to Buffalo. We got them talking about the Niggers. They really opened up on the Niggers. And I got it all on electronic tape. Well, anyhow, when we got back to the United States, they were giving some of our Canadian comrades trouble up there in Toronto, some pretty bad trouble. So I called the office where these two guys worked out of, got in touch with them. And I said, I hear you're really giving our people a hard time. Yeah, what do you want? I said, well, I'll tell you what, I've got a recording that if I release it, you're both going to lose your jobs. So I would suggest that you be a little nicer to Tommy's friends. And that's the last I heard of that. And the other thing I was going to say is, on that deal where we went to British Columbia and set up such a ruse that I was supposed to be in British Columbia Hotel and they tried to break it down and burn it down, I was still down here in California, never left the state. And I told you that Dennis Mahon went up through Detroit with fishing tackle and stuff, and he was going on a fishing trip. But the RCMP didn't buy that. they grabbed him and threw him in jail. He was in jail for 3 or 4 days, too, before they shipped him out, shipped him back to the States. Well, we've had a lot of fun in our day. Lots of fun. I haven't even begun to tell you all the fun we've had. How many guys do you know that are willing to go to jail just to set up a deal, a program like that? So I do owe Dennis Mahan on 2 or 3 occasions. They won't let Danny Mahan visit his brother Dennis in the prison because they're identical twins. And those wardens and guards are so stupid, they think that Danny may switch with Dennis and Dennis walk out of the prison. How stupid could you be? But that's the way they operate in these prisons.
At the dawn of the Viking Age, the family farm was the basic economic unit of Norse life. As farmers and herdsmen, they planted grains and vegetables during the short growing seasons and relied heavily on livestock. But peace in the Northland was coming to an end. The expanding Viking population needed more fertile farmland, and tensions boiled over. Inevitably, violence flared between the Viking clans. As the stronger attacked the weaker, raiders fell on farmers with axes, swords, and brutal violence. Land feuds erupted with utter lawlessness.
Basically, a king was a man who had a big farm. And he had his bonders, his farmers, and his slaves. And whenever he felt like going and attacking somebody else, he just got all his guys together and went off and attacked them. The Vikings would run into the village, grab everything they could, take off again. It's not terribly sophisticated, but very effective.
Some Vikings, however, set aside their differences and prepared to seek their fortunes elsewhere. The hands and tools that once shaped the cross beams of barns turned to another task. Along the shores of the northern inlets, boats were built. Boats that changed the lives of these people. Viking longships. These extraordinary vessels, revolutionary in design, took history on a new course and launched an onslaught that dominated Europe and beyond for the next 3 centuries.
Well, if we can't control the land, maybe it's time to go back and control the sea. Look at those narco traffickers employing submarines to get their job done. If they can do that kind of stuff, we can do a lot more, right? Anybody know where we can buy a used submarine? There's probably a lot of them around. We don't have to put all our nuts in one barrel, man. You know, I get a big bang out of the progressives. They're so damn funny. Like this one here. It seems the nation's most prominent racists and white supremacists all had a hand in Donald Trump's. That cut off on me. Look. It seems the nation's most prominent racists and white supremacists all had a hand in Donald Trump's campaign platform of hate. Donald Trump started his presidential campaign with openly racist attacks on Mexicans. That attack on that Mexican judge was a silly little thing. It wasn't even a major attack. We want to attack all the mestizos, period. Run them out of the country, period. You didn't hear him say anything like that, did you? Calling them rapists and criminals. Well, a hell of a big percentage of them are rapists and criminals. The prisons are already full of them to the hilt. And his campaign only got worse from there. Trump hired white nationalist Steve Bannon. I've never seen Steve Bannon admit to being a white nationalist. I don't think it's possible. I'm going to release an article on that guy. You guys get all excited about any time somebody appears maybe to be a little racist. I don't trust almost anybody. especially people who do so-called racist things but don't admit to being racist. Trump, as well as his son and now some of his closest advisors, regularly relied on racist and anti-Semitic memes throughout his campaign. Talk about softballs. Sending a deafening dog whistle to America's racists. You mean the Hollywood Nazis? That's how Trump won the endorsement of the KKK and former KKK wizard David Duke. Well, if Duke had really wanted to help Trump, that would have been the last thing he would have done. Endorse him. I said it at the time. He just wanted to get on the train and get a little publicity, that's all. Now it turns out another of the country's most fervent racists, right-wing media personality, Ann Coulter, had a hand in helping Trump make his pitch to the most hateful elements of American electorate. Baby, you haven't seen anything yet. If those people are racist, what the hell am I? I'm totally out on Saturn someplace. According to a new book about Trump's campaign, the Trump team hired Coulter to quickly write a white paper on the Trump's immigration policies. After Trump was criticized for having no policies at all, Coulter then praised the policy paper as the greatest political document since the Magna Carta, without mentioning that she wrote it. Well, why not take credit? I'm afraid what they get mixed up with the racism of the ruling class and the racism of the working class, that's where everybody gets all screwed up. Because racism of the ruling class is a lot different, a lot sneakier. But they're not our racists. They don't have our best interests at heart. Never did, never will. Coulter, who has built her decades-long career on smearing Democrats. Well, you don't have to work hard to smear Democrats. And championing white supremacy, was a staunch advocate for Trump during the presidential campaign. As right-wing watch notes, they got this outfit that watches the right wing. What a boring thing to do all day. Watch the right wing. Trump's campaign rhetoric mirrored Coulter's hateful book, Adios America. Well, shit, we knew all this, Ann, 40 years ago. We knew it all of this 40 years ago. You write these books now. Let's see, Adios America. Oh, the mestizos are coming. The mestizos are coming. Shit, we knew all that decades ago. And you didn't do anything. I don't know where you were at. Maybe you were still in grade school. The left's plan to turn our country into a third world hellhole. Well, that's true. They willingly are doing that. They want to let everybody in. Let them take everything, you know. Give them all your jobs. Give them all your women, so forth. In which he shamelessly argued that the government should round up and deport 11 million illegals. It's a lot more than that, Ann. There's probably 30 or 40 million. Not the Hispanics, which you never talk about. It's the mestizos, the mixed race people. Trump has for years insisted that he is the least racist person there is. I think that's true. I think it's his interest is money. Always has been money, always will be. It has always been a demonstrably false and absurd claim. The people he had to work with in New York City, are you kidding? Being an out-and-out racist, you wouldn't survive. He has a number of white nationalists on his White House payroll. I hate that word, white nationalist. It's white racist, paid with taxpayers' money to the sum of $359,555. one such member of his administration is Sebastian Gorka, a Nazi sympathizer, whatever that means, who was on his way out of the White House before Trump and Bannon personally intervened to save his job. Yeah, these guys are real Nazis, all right. And, of course, Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who was one of Trump's fiercest surrogates on the campaign trail, has his own long record of racist attacks. Yeah, right. Putting racists in jail down south. And the Republican Party and all that bullshit down south. He may have saved one once in a while, but most of them he put in prison. Yeah, he cooperated with Morris Deese. And, of course, Attorney General, well, that yet one more nationally recognized advocate for racist policies helped inform Trump's platform. And his presidential agenda isn't shocking, but is further evidence of this ugly, divisive, and blatantly racist agenda has been since the very beginning. This is false flag stuff, boys and girls. This is not the real racist cause. It's people pretending, people dodging the issue. Yeah, it sure is. I hope you understand that. There's a false flag racist movement in this country. And you should know who the people that are involved in it are. Because they're there to protect the ruling class. They'll use the white nationalists for whatever ends they want them for, to further the cause of the big capitalists and so forth. And they won't even know it. They won't even be aware they're being used. Yeah. Well, let's see where I'm at here. Got to find my pause button. There it is. I debated Ann Coulter one time. Couldn't get a word in edgewise. She was screaming and yelling and saying what a bad guy I was. All of those so-called right-wing racist media people, they hate your guts, they hate my guts, because we're the real thing and they're not. They play with race, but they're not serious racists. But there's a hell of a lot of people around the country going to follow them right into the ground, I'll tell you that. Well, I see that one dead, 32 wounded in a weekend of shootings by the black KKK across Chicago. Yeah. They're dropping like flies. That black KKK is doing a lot better job than a white KKK. In Chicago, murders are up 41%. No outpacing Chicago. I think it's great because they're not doing anything really about it. They're all afraid to do what needs to be done. They don't have the balls to do it. And so it's just going to continue to go further into the pit, into the toilet. Chicago's going to become... That's one of the reasons I moved out of Indiana, because all that shit is slopping out of the commode over into Indiana, right down through Gary and South Bend and even over to Fort Wayne, and Chicago is a cesspool already. The difference is you've got all these loving, crazy Christians who they're apologizing for them. Yeah, one black gets beaten up on the street and they go totally berserk, all the churches and everybody. But when they're out killing and killing all their black brothers, they don't say anything. So I guess the white Christians are supporting the black KKK, right? If you know what the truth is and you're telling people the truth and they don't care or don't listen, then they're part of the problem. Well, it doesn't make any difference in Chicago. The mestizos are going to outbreed the blacks anyhow and take over. Another, I don't know, maybe 10, maximum 20, Chicago will be a mestizo town. And the politicians will be mestizo long before that. One good thing that might come about it is the mestizos won't have any problem kicking their heads on the blacks. Mestizo cops and so forth. they'll get brutal. Here's one of the reasons nothing's going to change in Chicago or many of those other cities. The American Civil Liberties Union urged Mayor Rahm Emanuel in Chicago and the city council Monday to strengthen Chicago's welcoming city ordinance to ensure, quote, all immigrants, invaders, are protected without exception, unquote. You see, you never can straighten out the problem with that kind of an attitude. You need just the opposite. Treat them with, well, you know what they need to be treated with. Currently, Chicago police officers are permitted to cooperate with Immigration and Customs Enforcement if targeted individuals are in the city's gang database, have pending felony prosecutions or prior felony convictions, or if they are the subject of an outstanding criminal warrant. But they're not going to do that anymore. Let those bastards run. Let them burn down the city. For months, immigrant activists, invader fifth columnists is what they are, the Black Youth Project and the Hispanic aldermen. Now, most of these people who they call Hispanic are not no more Hispanic than my dog. They don't even know what a Hispanic is. And if you call people I know that originate from Spain, they are Hispanic. And when you call these greasy little mestizos Hispanic, they go through the roof. It's too bad they can't organize. They think they're going to slide by in the Republican Party. Well, the Republican Party will let them have some power, of course. They're already letting them have some power. But it won't be total. It'll be a lot like it is in Mexico. White ruling class in Mexico will still run the show, but they're not your kind of whites. That's the problem. See, oh, all this white ruling class, they're our enemies. They're not our friends. Of the 41,000 outstanding arrest warrants in Cook County, more than half are at least 10 years old. The ACLU claim many of those warrants stem from a technical violation of probation or supervised release. Not a new charge, the ACLU said. This is good. This all works in our favor. Don't work in the conservatives' favor. Don't work in the progressives' favor. But it works in our favor, because worse is better. There's a picture here I got off the internet showing a bunch of mestizos in a city council meeting, and a white guy is holding this big sign. He's about 50 years old and got that typical I'm a Christian look on his face. The sign says, "Make Chicago safer and more welcoming for all." While the gunshots are outside the building and people are dropping dead all over the place. Well, we just have to be nicer to them, that's all. I welcome vigilante action. I'm not going to start it, and I'm not going to promote that you do it, but it's going to happen, whether you want it or not. I see they got these gatekeeper guys running around. They'll all deny they're racist, and they'll all condemn you and me because we're rotten, hateful racists. But underneath, they are racist, but they don't have any balls. Or they have balls, but they have balls for the wrong things. Guess who's in front of the crowd? Mr. Glenberg. Glenberg. You think he's from Sweden or something? I don't think so. In a letter to key committee chairman, ACLU senior staff attorney Rebecca K. Glenberg argued that the Chicago Police Department already has plenty of tools to arrest and detain individuals who pose a real threat to the public, whether or not they're immigrants. Interesting. What would you guess is Glenberg's background and ethnicity? And they've got this thing floating around this insane mentality that if you don't arrest and don't persecute these mestizos, then they'll help the cops find the bad guys. Well, most of them are not going to help find the bad guys. They hated cops in Mexico, and they hate cops in Chicago, and they hate cops in Miami. They hate cops wherever they're at because they come from cultures that are smarter about cops. Now, if you want to know how the plague is moving back there in Indiana, Chicago, and Illinois, there's a newspaper called the NorthwestTimes.com, and it's up in there around Gary and Hammond and so forth, and they're starting to drop like flies up there, drive-bys, gang killings, everything. Now, Hammond is only about an hour and a half drive from where I was living. It's moving like an ink blot all down through northwest Indiana, and it's moving extremely fast. I think the good white people of the Midwest are going to get a shocking revelation as time goes on. Now, if you think I'm kidding here, but here's a story from Chicago. A boy whose age is believed to be between 6 and 8 is accused of an armed robbery that happened in June on the south side of Chicago, Chicago police reported. The incident was among one of 11 similar incidents that took place in a Chicago neighborhood. Chicago police believe at least 3 different suspects, including the young child, are among those committing the robberies. According to the Chicago Police Crime Alert, the young child is accused of displaying a silver handgun and demanding money. The incident took place on June the 29th. You see how they call him the young child. The young child. The murderous marauder. The monkey boy. There's another Chicago comment. 7 shot in a half an hour, including 3 at Rainbow Beach Park. Wow.
By Robert Perry, the anti-Russian McCarthyism that has spread out from the United States to encompass the European Union, Canada, and Australia has at its core an implicit recognition that neoliberal economics and neoconservative foreign policy have failed. A scene from Dr. Strangelove, in which the bomber pilot, played by actor Slim Pickens, rides a nuclear bomb to its target in the Soviet Union. When I recently asked a European journalist why this anti-Russian hysteria had taken root among mainstream European political parties, he answered with a question, "Do you think they can run on their success in handling the recession and the refugees?" In other words, European voters are angry about the painful economic conditions that followed the Wall Street crash of 2008 and the destabilizing surge of immigrants fleeing from Western regime change wars in Iraq, Syria, Libya, and Afghanistan. So, like the Democratic Party that doesn't want to engage in a soul-searching self-examination about Donald Trump's victory, the European establishment parties need a handy excuse to divert criticism, and that excuse is Russia, a blame shifting that has allowed nearly every recent criticism of an establishment government official to be sloughed off as Russian disinformation. It doesn't even matter anymore that the criticism may be based on solid fact. Even truthful information is now deemed Russian disinformation or Russian-inspired fake news. We saw that in the Canadian mainstream media's denunciations of ConsortiumNews.com for running an article that pointed out that Canada's Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland had misrepresented her family history to white out her maternal grandfather's role editing a Nazi newspaper in Poland that demonized Jews and justified the Holocaust. Virtually every mainstream outlet in Canada rallied to Freeland's side when she dismissed our article as Russian disinformation. Only later did a few newspapers grudgingly acknowledge that our story was true and that Freeland knew it was true. Still, the attacks on us continued. We were labeled Russian disinformationists, with no evidence needed to support the slander and no defense allowed. Though arguably a small example, the Freeland story reflects what is happening across the Western mainstream news media. Almost every independent-minded news article that questions the establishment narratives on international affairs is dismissed as Russian propaganda. The few politicians, academics, and journalists who don't march in the establishment's parade are Moscow stooges or Putin apologists. The Russian resistance. This anti-Russian hysteria began some years ago when Russian President Vladimir Putin made clear that Russia would no longer bow to dictates from Washington and Brussels. Russia bristled at the encroachment of NATO on its borders, rejected the neoconservative agenda of regime change wars in Muslim countries, and resisted the U.S.-backed putsch ousting Ukraine's elected president in 2014. Hillary Clinton speaking at a rally in Phoenix, Arizona, March 21, 2016. Photo by Gage Skidmore. But the anti-Russian frenzy gained unstoppable momentum with the United States election in 2016. The Democrats, liberals, and neoconservatives were horrified at the shocking upset of their presidential choice, Hillary Clinton, by the boorish and buffoonish Donald Trump. After this bitter defeat, the losers looked for scapegoats rather than order up a serious autopsy on how they lost to the unelectable Trump, i.e., by choosing a corporate candidate who was associated with neoliberal economics and neoconservative war policies. Blaming Russia became the easy excuse that could unify the various pro-Clinton camps. So, the Obama administration in an unprecedented step sought to poison the well for its successor by having the United States intelligence community put out evidence lacking allegations about Russian meddling in the United States election to elect Trump. The promoters of this Russia Did It narrative merged with the number resistance movement to do whatever was necessary to push Trump out of office. It didn't seem to matter that there was very little evidence that the Russians actually did meddle in the election. The chief claim was that the Russians gave WikiLeaks the Democratic emails revealing the Democratic National Committee's sabotage of Senator Bernie Sanders's campaign and the emails of Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta exposing the contents of Clinton's hidden speeches to Wall Street and some pay-to-play features of the Clinton Foundation. WikiLeaks denied getting the material from the Russians, but more to the point, there was no evidence of collusion between Moscow and the Trump campaign, as even Obama's Director of National Intelligence James Clapper and New York Times columnist Thomas Friedman have acknowledged. The WikiLeaks disclosures also were not a major factor in Clinton's defeat, which she primarily blamed on FBI Director James Comey briefly reopening the investigation of her using a private email server while Secretary of State. Still, the absence of evidence has not deterred Democrats, liberals, and neocons from spinning a vast Russian conspiracy theory that ties together Trump's past business dealings in Russia with the notion that somehow Putin foresaw that Trump would become the United States president, an eventuality that nearly every American pundit considered an impossibility as recently as last year. But skeptics of the Trump/Russia conspiracy, if they dare, note that Putin would have needed the world's best Ouija board to foresee Trump's victory, must then prove that they are not Russian propaganda/disinformation agents for having these doubts. New McCarthyism and Maddow. Given the emergence of this new Cold War, I suppose it made sense that we would soon have a new McCarthyism, although it may have come as a surprise that this witch hunting is being led by the liberals and the mainstream media, albeit with important assistance from the neoconservatives who have long engaged in smearing the patriotism of anyone who doubted their geopolitical genius. MSNBC host Rachel Maddow. Remember back in 1984 when the United States Ambassador to the United Nations Jean Kirkpatrick, an early neocon, denounced traitorous Americans who would blame America first. But it appears now that many liberals and even progressives are so blinded by their hatred of Trump that they haven't thought through the wisdom of their new alliance with the neocons or the fairness of smearing fellow Americans as Putin apologists. Meanwhile, mainstream news organizations have abandoned even the pretense of professional objectivity in their propagandistic approach toward anything related to Russia or Trump. For instance, I would defy anyone reading the New York Times coverage of Russia to assess it as fair and balanced when it is clearly snarky and sneering. It also turns out that this new McCarthyism has become profitable for its leading practitioners. The New York Times reported on Monday that the ratings for MSNBC's Rachel Maddow are soaring with her frequent anti-Russian rants. Now, rattled liberals are surging back to network television, seeking catharsis, solidarity, and relief, the Times wrote, citing a Kentucky woman explaining why she has become a devotee of Maddow. She's always talking about the Russians. Frankly, for the past dozen years, I've wondered about Maddow. I first heard her on the radio in August 2005 when she was a summer fill-in at Air America reporting on President George W. Bush's Katrina fiasco, which she partly blamed on the deployment of Louisiana National Guard units to Iraq, so they couldn't help evacuate flooded New Orleans. It was clear that Maddow was talented and her excoriation of the Iraq War was on point, although by summer 2005 it didn't require a huge amount of journalistic courage to slam Bush over the Iraq War. As I watched her career rise through a regular Air America gig to her show on MSNBC and then to stardom as an anchor on the network's election coverage, I always wondered whether she would put her lucrative corporate acceptance at risk and go against the grain at a tough journalistic moment. Now, Maddow's behavior in becoming a modern-day mainstream media Joe McCarthy has put my doubts to rest. She is riding high in the ratings by keeping her whip hand coming down hard on the bash Russia steed. She is putting her career or her politics ahead of journalism. Like so many other Democrat/liberal/neocon activists, Maddow not only ignores the evidentiary gaps in the Russia did it conspiracy theory, but she seems oblivious to the dangers of her opportunism. By stirring up this McCarthyistic frenzy, she and her never-Trump allies make a rational policy toward nuclear-armed Russia nearly impossible. Thus, she is contributing to the real risk of a hot war with Russia that could lead to the annihilation of life on the planet. Thin-skinned Trump. One of the bitter ironies here is that Trump's critics correctly noted that his thin-skinned temperament made him unfit to possess the nuclear button, but they are now egging him into a mano-a-mano confrontation with Putin. If Trump doesn't get the better of Putin in every situation, Trump will face renewed pummeling for selling out to the Russians. President Donald Trump being sworn in on January 20, 2017. Screenshot from WhiteHouse.gov. Already, neocon Senator Lindsey Graham has declared, 2017 is going to be a year of kicking Russia in the ass in Congress. If Trump doesn't go along, he will face battering from the likes of Maddow, the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, and pretty much every mainstream news outlet. So, Trump may have no political choice but to get tough. But what happens when Putin pushes back? In the past, when I've made this point about the recklessness of Russia bashing, I've been told that I'm being alarmist, that kicking Russia in the ass and baiting Trump to join in the kicking won't lead to a nuclear war, that the Russians aren't that stupid. Yeah, let's hope not. On the upside of this anti-Russia strategy, the anti-Trump activists insist it is the most promising route to get rid of Trump, which they view as justifying almost any action. It's not for them to prove that Trump did conspire with Putin to rig the United States presidential election, it's enough to raise the suspicion and use it to push for Trump's impeachment. As someone who has covered national security scandals since the 1980s,
I am familiar with the kind of evidence that should be required for making serious allegations. For instance, when Brian Barger and I wrote the first story about Nicaraguan Contra drug trafficking in 1985 for the Associated Press, we had about 24 sources, plus documents. Most of the sources were insiders, that is, inside the Contra movement and inside the Reagan administration, who described how the operation was run. We had this evidence before we made any public accusation. In the case of the Russia-Trump conspiracy theory, the United States intelligence community has presented almost no evidence of Russian hacking and admits that it has no evidence of Trump's collusion with the Russians. As far as we know, there is no insider who has described how this alleged conspiracy occurred. That is not to say that some evidence might not eventually surface that confirms the Russia-Trump suspicions, but that is true of all conspiracy theories. Who knows, maybe Joe McCarthy was right about all those communists inside the United States government secretly working for the Kremlin. Maybe he did have a real list of names. But that is what witch hunts are all about, investigations designed to prove a point whether true or not. In this current case, however, the downside is not just the destruction of people's careers and a few imprisonments. The downside of playing chicken with nuclear-armed Russia is the end of life as we know it. At such a moment, journalists and politicians should demand the highest standards of proof, not no proof at all. Sometimes, I envision the argument that I would hear as the mushroom clouds begin rising over the United States and Russian cities. If not incinerated in the first moments of the cataclysm, the smart people of the mainstream, the United States media, and their liberal and neocon allies, would be insisting that it wasn't their fault, it was someone else's fault, blame shifting to the end. So, as the Democrats and liberals join with the neocons in launching this new McCarthyism over Russia, and with people like Rachel Maddow leading the charge, what is arguably the most depressing fact is that there appears to be no Edward R. Murrow, a mainstream journalist with a conscience, anywhere on the horizon.
Well, there you go. That's what the ruling class are doing now, what they're up to, how they're getting us closer and closer to some kind of a problem with Russia. That's what they want. And that's probably what they're going to get. Scratching around in my little box of tapes here, I come up with an interesting conversation. It was during the Morris Dees lawsuit and the whole bit. And Kirk Lyons called me on the phone. I don't know whether you guys out there know Kirk Lyons at all, but he was pretty active at one time as an attorney for taking the cases of a lot of people, including guys that were in the order. So here's a few minutes of what he had to say.
Yeah. This is Kirk. How are you doing?
Well, good to talk to you, Guy. I've been going to try to reach you.
Well, I thought I would give you a call before the Christmas madness again.
Yes.
Yeah, the Jews are kind of slow today because it's snowed down here and nobody can go shopping.
Well, this is one of my favorite days. You know why?
Why?
I get to call Morris today.
Oh, do you?
And tell him I want him to present his fellow that he's handling the case for, the uncle of Sirignu Bagnu Bigdu Boo-Boo, for us to depose him.
Well, how about this?
And I thought that would make a nice Christmas Eve present for Morris. Because we've got him, you know, scratching where they don't itch. They don't file their papers on time and everything else, and we filed our motions to block their dismissal of the federal case. And because the state case that they filed is, you know, it's worse to fight.
Yeah.
And so I talked to the clerk yesterday, and or day before. before, we wanted them to knock the state action and put them on the shelf until it's decided in federal court. And they talked like they weren't, but anyhow, I called Mr. Rosenthal, D's ADL West Coast man, and said I'd like for him to do that. So he promptly sent me a letter and said, fine. So until the federal action is decided, that stays the state action. And so we're gonna start taking depositions. Just like he's in Oakland, and he's very near to Andy, the fellow you talked to.
Right. Uh-huh.
So I'll fly up there and depose him.
Okay. That ought to be fun.
Oh yeah. So right at the moment, that's where we stand in the water. We're trying to research case law on this situation. And
did you get the stuff that Randy Evans sent me to you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And how's it going in Dallas?
Right now things are just kind of all quiet on the northern front.
In what, February or something?
February 20th is when they set the trial.
Okay. I sent some stuff to this investigator, White. Seems to be a pretty good guy, trying to, I guess, help those kids.
Yeah.
So I sent him some stuff, and I got him in touch with Laird Wilcox, who's got a lot more stuff. And I got another case that may affect it a little bit, at least psychologically. Marotz, the Polish freedom fighter guy up in Massachusetts, was just convicted on a trespass and vandalism charge. And what he had done was somebody had put swastikas on a synagogue sign, and he didn't want them using that for, you know, to aggrandize himself, so he went over to spray out the swastikas. So they arrested him for getting rid of the swastikas.
Huh.
I think that's an interesting case, an interesting situation.
Sure is.
And I think we ought to play it up. In other words, they want to promote that as much as they can.
Mm-hmm.
Take in the shekels and all that stuff.
Yep.
Have you talked to Gary Gallo?
I have tried to get a hold of him.
Well, he's, okay, now, do you have a...
I called his office and I left a message that I had called.
Well, let me give you his home phone.
Okay.
Because I think it's important you guys talk. Just a minute. Okay.
Just back.
Just a minute. No, this is Kirk Lyons.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, you want to read it off?
615-992-992.
And he seemed agreeable to work with us. And I'd ask him to get in touch or... so that Frank Silva could call him. Frank's going
to
put him
on. I did talk to Frank Silva.
I understand you did. That's good, because...
And as it turns out, the populists are flying me out to North Carolina to talk to their...
Yes.
...congregation or whatever.
Yes.
And so I'll only be like 20 minutes from Butner.
That's good.
So I'll have basically an all-expense-paid trip to go see Frank.
Oh, that's terrific. And I would... Because, yeah, you know, they won't allow anybody in to see him or anything. I mean, it's terrible. And, of course, being that far away, it's even difficult for his wife to see him.
Yeah.
So it's almost like solitary confinement. And this putting him up there is a total sham. I mean, even the people in the prison said, what are you here for? You know? So it's strictly a political move.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'll be able to see him in February, and I told him that.
Terrific.
He's going to put me on his visitation list. I should be able to get right in.
Yes. Yeah, that's great. Okay. Okay, let's see. What else is cooking?
I got...
Oh, hey. Another situation. There was a skinhead kid has been questioned back in the East someplace, alleged that alleging that he sent out nasty letters to non-whites or something. But in the conversation with the FBI, they said, well, did Tom Metzger's paper have anything to do with encouraging you to do this? Sounds just like the ADL and Morris D's.
Yeah. Put words in their mouth.
Yeah, right. So, what I want to pass around to people, and I don't know whether I'll ever get through to people about not talking, but, the Miranda decision's about as good a thing as anybody can read.
Yeah.
Because it says right there, and I'm going to alter the Miranda decision and call it the Aryan warning instead of the Miranda warning. And put these cards out, almost like a business card. Because these fools that talk to these people just get to me. I mean, it gets to me to the point where, God, you tell them a million times that they don't have to talk. They have a right to be silent. The stupid idiots to keep talking.
Yeah.
And I've said to people, if you talk, there's nothing we can do for you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't. How can we help you when you talk? I mean, you're helping them prove their case.
You're already giving away the ball game.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah. So I didn't get the big push on the foundation in the last issue of the paper, but the one coming up I will.
Well, we just had our first board of directors meeting.
Oh, terrific.
And we're working on the tax-exempt status now. We should have that in place in January.
Good.
And what I'm thinking is making a concerted push towards what I can call the conservative fogies. We're working on trying to rent the Spotlight's mailing list. And basically the pitch will be, we defend extremists, but they're in the front lines, and if they get wiped out, you're next.
Well, I'll tell you what, just a minute. It may be a little bit dated, but I think we've got the list.
Really?
And I'll give it to you.
That would be great.
If we can find it. I mean, it's about 2 years ago it was given to.
That's not too bad. We figure you'll only get a percentage anyway, but...
Well, the older ones with the money usually don't move around that much.
Yeah. And that's the thing. We've got to get it beyond the people on the front lines. They're spending all their money on ammunition to fight, and they don't have any money to send to the USO or to the medical department.
Well, we never used it because it's, to be perfectly honest, the majority of the people we'd reach in that list are not that hot to what we're up to, And so,
I think that this foundation is kind of a conduit. We can approach them in a way that we can lift them with some money.
Yes.
And put it into some good.
Well, as long as you don't get the guys that are going to give you a big chunk of money based upon, but you can't defend any of these crazy Nazis and Klansmen and freakos.
All gifts, you can't. The only thing they can do is they can direct their money towards a specific object. For instance, if there's something in the trust account.
Yes.
A legal scholarship.
Yes.
That's one thing we've just set up, a legal scholarship, a law school scholarship.
That's great.
Which has already got $100 in it.
Good.
A prisoner of choice, if you want to send money to Doug Sheets or Frank Silva or Bruce Pierce, we'll have that in the trust account, and they can direct their money go into the trust account as opposed to the operating account.
Well, that would be...
They can't dictate to us how it's going to be used.
Well, that would be... Well, this may eliminate a project that somebody had going, and I think it was Norris or Norton back in Alabama, and Doug... forget the name of the guy, but they were going to get some kind of a deal going on, a bank account, to where these various prisoners would get so much money a month or something by check that they could depend upon. I don't know. That might be an adjunct that could be covered by, money earmarked for something like that, because I told him, I said, well, get it all down in black and white and exactly what's going to be run, and send me the paperwork, and then we'll promote it. Well, that's the last I heard, because, you know, a lot of these guys, well, let's have a fund, you know.
Yeah.
But you got to understand, if you're not going to have big problems and be accused of all kinds of nasty things, you got to have it down black and white what you're going to do.
That's right.
Especially when so many different people are involved in giving money from different groups, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, the old canard, you know, oh, they took off with the money. I mean, you know, you know, usually it's not enough money to get you across the state line, but... Well, what do you want me to do? Just promote, and of course...
Yeah, just help spread the word.
Right.
We're in business.
We've yes.
We've got the foundation. We've got our nonprofit charter from the state of Texas.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to be going up to Idaho over Christmas and mm-hmm. New Year's to visit with Pastor Butler. But while I'm there,
mm-hmm.
I got a very long letter from Everett Hoffmeister, who was his attorney at Fort Smith.
Yes.
And... he is willing to support the foundation. He says he's got four or five other attorneys in the Northwest area that share his concerns about the state of the Constitution that might be willing to support it. So he wants me to come and talk to them.
That'd be good. It would. If I have to go to...
That's the kind of help we need. We need people with a bar card.
Yeah, and I need... I'll tell you what I'm going to need. Is some. If it goes to state action, I'm going to have some kind of an attorney in the Oregon area. To help carry the ball for us.
Sound that one for you.
Yeah, if you find one that'll be halfway decent to us and is sharp, you know. I don't want these, you know, these attorneys that you look on their bookshelf and it's the same books that were there 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I've seen some of those conservative attorneys that they just don't keep up with the law.
Right.
And, so they're actually more dangerous than having just an ordinary kike working for you.
Well, if that's the case, they're no better than the guys in prison that have access to these antiquarian law libraries that the prison has.
That's right. That's exactly right. So, yeah, if you could nose around for somebody like that and, you know, sort of explain to them what the deal is and... well, we're going to be putting out fund appeals. I don't know how this is going to work out. We're going to be in a little bit competing at right at the beginning.
Yeah.
Cause
well, that's something that I saw as inevitable, and a lot of these other people, frankly, you know, they resent my intrusion on the scene simply because it, you know, it cuts into their little 200-man mailing list.
No, all I'm interested in is if, you know, if we'd have had a couple of years of work with the foundation before this thing broke loose, it'd be, you know, no problem.
Well, see, what my goal is to reach as many people in the quote-unquote patriotic movement as possible.
Yeah.
So that all you got to do is send $5 a month.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't have to send $50, $10, $25,
yeah.
$100. Just $5 a month.
Sure.
It's kind of like legal insurance. You
know, well, I think we should even put together fundraisers and the whole bit. I mean, I can, every once in a while, do something like that and just have a big blowout and show movies or whatever we do, and we can have fundraisers for it.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's one thing that I could that I want to put together as a form of fundraising is seminars.
Yeah.
You know, what to do when you're arrested. A seminar by the Patriots Defense Foundation. And,
well, I think you should pick out a good paralegal course that people can take at home, too, and support it. Some kind of a paralegal course.
If I can find one that I'm confident with, I'll push it.
Well, I'm trying to talk my son in, and he's been talking to me about going down here to National University and getting into the paralegal thing. I told him, I mean, you know, he's real sharp with everything else, and I said, now's the time to do it. You're not married and everything. And I think
he's... You can get him through law school? Damn good attorney.
Well, I mean, obviously, if he, you know, takes a little bit at a time and he makes good money when he works with his electronics and stuff like that, he could do it. But I didn't want to scare him with law school, you know.
Well, you know, the thing about law school is whether you ever practice a day of law in your life.
Yeah.
In this maggot-ridden corpse of a society of ours, it gives you automatic respect. Hard to get any other way.
Well, we do have a law school right down here in San Diego, and I forget the name of it. It's close. And know. But anyhow, I'm going to keep encouraging him.
It's not a, you know, paralegals are fine, but there's only limits to what they can do.
I know, but you know as well as I do, I've met paralegals that could run circles around attorneys.
That's true, but they don't have the power that right. an attorney has when he gets that bar card.
Yeah, but that bar card also is a lever against him, too.
That's true.
You know, that I remember when Don Musgrove, who was a great paralegal, worked with me. I mean, he got away with things that a lawyer couldn't, you know?
Yeah.
Because we'd be pro per and he'd be giving me the information. And we got away with stuff an attorney couldn't do, and they'd probably been disbarred. Well, like I say, now I've got a lot of contributed help here from the man up north. But there are going to be expenses in the case, especially if it goes into the state court. Now, the ACLU is sort of on the sidelines looking at this thing, too. The Portland ACLU, I didn't request to enter the case, but they were quoted in the paper, said they probably wouldn't enter it directly, but they may submit a friend of the court brief, which helps.
Oh, yeah.
I may send another letter to the ACLU in New York City. If we can keep this thing in federal court, I think we got something pretty good going here.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And then, sure, we can arrange, you know, to get you up here, too.
Yeah.
On this thing. But if it goes into the state court, it's going to be tough.
Mm-hmm.
The damn expenses of just flying up there are tremendous.
I can imagine.
You know. But, once in a while, somebody gives us some freebie tickets. That helps.
Well, I should be racking up those frequent flyer miles.
It somehow I don't figure out, really. Yeah. So, well, Gary's a good man. I like Gary.
I'll call him. I saw him. I've seen him on TV. I think he was on Crossfire one time.
Yeah, he's a very stern, by the book type. You know, he went to West Point.
Yeah, that's what impressed me about him. He had a military bearing that I liked.
Yeah, now I'll give you one other clue on, you know, psychological profile. A lot of people can't get along with him, working real close with him, because he's pretty demanding and tight-lipped and, you know, like that. He's a nice guy, and he's always treated me for fine a whole bit, but in something like this, I think it can work out very well. So, anyhow, that's a little background on him, but he's seems to be 100% in the battle.
Well, I look forward to talking to him, but just haven't connected yet. But I'll call him at home.
Okay, fine.
So.
And let's see. What I'm trying to work on now is getting a good attorney to enter the case in L.A. where the skinhead was shot in the back and paralyzed because one of the guys was shot, his mother or something, got some Jew attorney in Beverly Hills, which, I mean, if he's good, who cares? But the point is, he's dragging his feet, and I'm quite worried that this kid is paralyzed if it isn't moved on real good and like that, going to be left out in the cold. I don't know whether we could file civil charges in federal court against the grocery store or not, or you have to exhaust your state court possibilities on that, or I guess under civil rights you could, huh?
Under civil rights, no, you can go directly into federal court.
I think a federal court suit against this grocery store that's their employees and knifed and were in on the shooting could really be something.
Yeah, is it a chain?
It's a chain, American Stores, that owns Lucky's. It's,
okay.
It took place in Lucky's. Now, I don't know if you'd be interested in involving that because there's going to be some big money in that case.
Yeah, I would. I need all the experience I can get in civil rights litigation because that's what's going to be the gravy train.
Yeah.
The is
yeah.
Filing civil charges against these bastards and making them pay.
Yeah, well, that's because the kid is paralyzed, of course, and he's already got $100,000 worth of doctor bills. And if he doesn't get a big, big bunch of money that he can invest and have a steady income, he's going to end up in the back of a county hospital.
Yeah, I know.
So, well, maybe maybe a little later. Let's see, now you're going to Idaho.
I'll be in Idaho from December 27th to January 3rd.
Is there any way that you can drop back to L.A. on the way back to where you're going, or would that be a big...
Not without sacrificing that ticket.
Yeah.
Non-refundable. You know how they do it now. You
got
to book it 14 days in advance.
Okay, well, let me see. I think I can... does Continental fly out of your town there?
Yes, it does. It sure does. It has a major terminal here.
Okay, well, then I'll tell you what. Why don't we figure a deal after you get back, and I get you a round-trip ticket up here.
Okay.
You can go visit these kids and talk to them and get the story, and the guys can take you down, show you. We got videotape, everything.
Okay.
And then we can go from there.
Sounds good.
Because I'm going to tell... If we could win this case... I mean, there's going to be big money in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not only we need it for him, but it could help the foundation.
Sure could.
And also, it would serve notice that we're not taking this shit anymore.
That's the main thing we need to serve.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put up with this anymore.
Well, why don't you call me then as soon as you get back?
I sure will, Tom.
Yeah, and then we'll go from there.
All righty. Well, you all have a happy holidays.
Well, you do too, and like I say, we'll keep pushing... I'm going to promote the foundation all the way, and the only thing I have to do is make sure I can cover the out-of-pocket expenses there in Oregon.
Sure.
And like that. So, but you can. I'm not going to be fighting you. That's for sure. I'm going to be with you.
I understand. I appreciate it.
Okay.
We're in the same uniform.
I'm not one of those jealous sons of bitches that, you know, your mailing list and the whole bit. And we'll dig out this mailing list and I'll get it to you.
I appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay, Tom.
See you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you go. Another trip down memory lane with Kirk Lyons and talking about some people on there that you probably recognize the names and so forth. And that story about that L.A. shooting was something else. They had a birthday party, and this skinheads did, and during the party, two or three of them went down to the grocery store to get some beer, and a couple of the Mexicans in the store had knives and so forth, and one had a gun, and they shot him and got him right in the spine, and he was... paralyzed from then on. He just passed away, I think it was last year. But he never got a dime. We never were able to get a dime for him. It's too bad. I'll be back tomorrow, and maybe we'll have some more of this old stuff around here. Sayonara.